Today we have Monday Girl joining the show. Monday Girl is one of the prominent private social clubs for women. What do you think about the pod, bro?
I enjoyed the podcast.
Yeah.
Right? I enjoyed the podcast. It was nice having Rachel and Istiana on the show. And it's remarkable what they've built with that platform, right? Because a lot of people complain, how can I build natural connections with people around me? How can I meet other people who are like-minded? How can I get to know other girls who are in a corporate space who want to have goals to make it to VP, to president, to CEO, or whatever? But when you go to networking events, there's a disconnect there because everybody is looking to network with maybe the highest person in the room with like the biggest title, right? But this is like you're coming in an equal playing field with other women, and you actually get to network with those people who are in these high spaces because they actually offer mentorship. So I think they've built an amazing platform. And how many users do they got now? How many members?
I think they have like over 100,000.
100,000 members. Mm-hmm. Wow. Right? And that's only like in a matter of like 3 years.
Three, four years.
Yeah.
No, I think they started in 2017. So it's 2017. It's been quite a while.
But starting with brunches, with mm-hmm. lunches and those meetups to what they have now, like from the pandemic, like that is remarkable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we really had a good conversation around the importance of strong networks, mm-hmm. networking horror stories.
Even sliding in DMs, bro.
Sliding in DMs. That was a great part.
You know, a lot of people they see someone they fancy on LinkedIn. Maybe it's a girl or guy. You look at their credentials. They went to a great school. They have a great job. You're like, wow, like this. You maybe create them on Insta. You're like, wow, okay, these are cool people. How do you ethically do that? Mm-hmm. And it was actually Rachel's a current partner. He did the same thing with her and slid in LinkedIn DMs, and they started talking. And now look at them. They've been together for many years now.
Yeah.
Right. So LinkedIn is becoming a place where connections go way deeper than mm-hmm. what they actually offer in mm-hmm. terms of like, okay, let's just transact, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think they do a good job of talking to men specifically, how to network properly, like when you're a room full of girls and, you know, networking, like what are some do's and don'ts? For example, in like the EYL, I was telling you, like the music was so loud. Mm-hmm. I'm leaning in, talking to this young lady mm-hmm. and it looks like I'm trying to chop, mm-hmm, you know? So mm-hmm. I think you're going to enjoy this pod in terms of like hearing from a woman's perspective, what they face and how we guys can, you know, make them comfortable and like maybe not do certain things that can maybe perceive as if you're trying to do more than networking.
Mm-hmm. Rachel has a hot take that she says about summits. We all found it interesting. We even talked about it after the pod. So I highly suggest you listen to that hot take as well. You were shocked?
I was flabbergasted.
Yeah, yeah. We were all like, really?
Yeah.
Because not many people do that. Mm-hmm. So let us know what you think about the pod. Make sure you comment down below. Now let's get into the show.
Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Hustle Over Everything. This is a podcast where we receive stories, tips, and tactics from entrepreneurs who have done it. I'm Alex.
And I'm Ono Sinde.
And today we have some amazing guests in the building. We have the Monday Girls in the house. We have Istiana and Rachel Wong. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having us.
Welcome to the show. All right. So to kick things off, one thing that I want to talk to y'all about is community building. We're here talking about community building. So mm-hmm. with community building, one of the main things that happens is networking. So what's one of the worst networking experiences y'all have had?
I feel like this is our inception story.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we started Monday Girl because of like early on in our careers, just how terrible networking was.
Yeah.
It's like I would go to a lot of these networking events. There used to be like very corporate, often very male dominated spaces. There'd be like cold pizza in the back, business cards, like you're shaking hands. And it just felt very like transactional. I dreaded going to them. They were not fun at all. And then like it's like LinkedIn, you're reaching out to people, no one gets back to you. Yeah. So very early on, I was like so frustrated trying to build my brand, trying to build my influence, get my foot in the door. And then we met through mutual friends and we were
complaining about it. That was the very first time we actually met, was actually through a coffee. And the first coffee chat that we had ended up being like a 6-hour rant. We were there for like so long. Wow. And all we were doing was like bonding over our hatred for networking.
Yes.
And trying to seek mentorship, because these are two things that were constantly being like, thrown upon us, like coming fresh out of school. They're like, you have to find a mentor, you have to go network. And it's not that we didn't think that was, it was like clearly true. Like I saw it from my friends. Like that's how they were landing jobs. That's how they were getting ahead. But like for us, I didn't have built in inherent networks from like our backgrounds. Like my immigrant parents had like, they couldn't call someone at X Bank to be like, hey, like, can you get my daughter a job? Like, yeah. I didn't have that.
Yeah.
And just remember just being like, this is so frustrating. Like, why is there not a better way specifically to meet other like-minded women or women that might have a shared experience similar to mine so they can actually give me tangible advice?
You know, as a man networking, I have my own, and I'm sure Owen has his own too, horrible experience with networking. But what experiences are unique to you guys that you experience and you feel consistently happens throughout your networking experience?
In terms of bad experiences?
Yeah, in terms of, as we're still on bad, and then we'll go around. So I'll have you, Istiana, go first, and I'll have you go after.
Yeah, consistently. Yeah, it's just things like you spend so much time crafting the perfect message on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. It's also really intimidating to try to connect with like high profile leaders. Yeah. So like first you have to work up the nerve to reach out, and then like you spend so much time and then they don't get back to you, which can be really discouraging. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that. Also, there's just like so much noise and so much, how do you, cut through and reach out? I was tired of that experience. We back to that conversation we were connecting. We're like, why is it so hard to meet like-minded women in the city? Like they're clearly out there. We can see all these, but like, how do you meet them? So we wanted to change that. And we hosted our own brunch with mutual friends, and then they had their friends invited, and we had a Facebook group, started really small, but what ended up happening is like all the people that attended, a lot of people actually got jobs from that first brunch.
Wow.
We're like, clearly we're onto something. Like we have to change this experience. I don't know about you.
I came from the world of tech and corporate, which you didn't come from. So I had the experience of walking to many, many rooms where I was like the only, like I was the only woman. I was the only woman that was a minority. And it was very obvious, and it felt very obvious. And it's not that I was getting like a lack of, like it wasn't that I was getting a shortage of advice either, but it just wasn't advice that applied to myself.
Yeah.
Like it's super interesting. I remember like Lean In, the book by Sheryl Sandberg, started being really popular at the time. And a lot of people would like, especially like, actually like, white older males would be like, you just gotta lean in and speak up.
What does that mean, lean in? I never get that. Like, lean in. Because actually, I got that book, funny enough, for my ex at the time. This is like 2017. I got her that Lean In book at Indigo in the mall. I was like, okay, I need a gift. Just pick up this book. Because like, she's business oriented as well. But
yeah,
I was looking at that title and lean in. I'm like, I was so confused what it meant. But I saw Sheryl Sandberg there. I'm like, okay, she's a powerful woman, Facebook, everything.
She definitely
has value, right? So, but what are your definitions of leaning in? Like in terms of like in your space, like when people say that to you, what did you think of it at the time, and how did it grow over time to like mean to you?
I loved the book when I was reading it. I remember reading on the plane. I was like, oh my God, I'm so inspired. I'm going to do all these things. And then I very quickly remember going to my first office meeting after reading the book, looking around the table and being like, yep, not for me. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way I can actually apply this.
Yeah.
And I just remember just thinking very clearly this whole concept of leaning in, and the way that she described it was, and again, I don't want to chalk up her experience or like the entire book, because there's a lot of merit behind it, her own personal journey. But a lot of the goal of it was trying to make women just like speak up. If you just speak your mind, if you're not shy, then like you'll get heard and eventually you'll land a role in leadership. Like that's kind of how she tries to frame it. And I just remember like just thinking to myself, I'm like, it's not for the lack that I'm trying to speak up. It's for the fact that I'm getting spoken over. My ideas are getting repeated by other people.
And they're taking credit.
And they're being taken credit for. Mm-hmm. And it was an experience that, like, I looked around and remember noticing, I'm like, that doesn't happen to the other girl, or that doesn't happen to the other guy. Mm-hmm. And then just realizing that advice did not apply to myself.
So when you say the other girl and the other guy, elaborate on that.
Let's just say the other girl was white.
Yes.
And then she's very confident and she was leaning in. Like she was leaning in. I was like, yes, girl, like you're leaning in. Wouldn't work for me. The other guy was being a guy, so he was also leaning in.
Yeah.
So,
it's natural for him to lean in.
Yeah, yeah, he's always leaned in. So
yeah. It's kind of like the Chad. Vivian K has this phrase, what would Chad do? Yeah. And
I like that.
Yeah. And one of the things that Chad does is continuously lean in and what in your experience. And the thing too, I think that's challenging with leaning in is that when you're new to the environment, you only have a few shots that you can put up before people start taking you not so serious.
Mm.
You know, if you have three ideas and two aren't the ones, they're like, well, now that he's giving new ideas, we should take him as seriously because those other two weren't as good. So now that can really hurt your confidence when it comes to bringing new ideas into the meeting. You know, but let's take a step back. You know, I want to learn more about your guys' lives and building Monday Girl. So what was some of the pivotal moments in your life that made you think maybe I could hop into entrepreneurship?
For me, So I had one job for 1 year, like a real 9-to-5, but the rest of my career has been running my own business. So when I graduated, like I started my own business with my partner.
Mm-hmm.
We had a photography business for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all just like, I remember applying to so many jobs and like not hearing back. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was just like, I'm just going to start my own business and like teach myself all the skills I need, like just figure it out. And I've always been that way. Like if I don't know the answer to something, I'll just figure it out and teach myself. So 6 years I ran a videography business. I also had a YouTube channel and I got to work with a lot of like travel agencies and travel boards, travel vlogging.
Mm-hmm.
So I have only ever known like entrepreneurship, and Monday Girl, technically we started it 6 years ago, that first brunch that I mentioned. And it was very much like just events, like side hustle for a long time. But then we started hosting bigger and bigger events with like 400 people, 500 people until the pandemic hit. And then we're like, okay, we can't host events anymore. What should we do? And that's when, so we decided to launch the digital platform.
Yeah.
And it really take it seriously. And then I went full-time Monday Girl about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And stopped my video business.
Business. So does your boyfriend still run the video business?
And okay. He does all of our content also.
Yes.
So yeah. Shout out to Alex.
Shout out to Al and Al, man. So, like with the name Monday Girl, like one thing I do love is your brand, right? Like the aesthetic, the color schemes, like the cream and the green. Has like a very like nice earthy tone behind it. You go from events, you're doing this brunch. You two are like thinking about, okay, let's continue doing this. How do you conceive the Monday Girl brand together? Like walk us through that process.
Yeah, it's definitely been an evolution.
It
started out very like, I think we had like a teal logo. Like it's definitely evolved over time, and we've kind of stayed in the same sort of family of color scheme, but we really wanted to make Monday Girl like very modern, clean, and really represent us. Essentially, like we built this platform because it's the platform we wish we had and the network that we wish we had. So I think sometimes that makes it easy when we're like thinking about design or branding decisions, like, okay, what do we genuinely like authentically? And it changes over time.
Yeah, who came up with Monday Girl? The name? I love Monday Girl name. Rachel, that was you?
That was me. Our very first call on the spot.
Yeah.
The very first, it was not actually a Monday. I think it was actually on the weekend.
Yeah.
I think it might have been a Sunday, which is probably why I started going on this rant. I was like ranting to her. I'm like, oh my God, I get it. Like I'm one of those people right now. But what if like we didn't have to like live for the weekends? Mm-hmm. Like what if like, and this is a time where it's like all these memes are like, you know, like fuck
Sunday
Mondays.
Scaries.
Yeah, like Sunday Scaries, Sunday scaries, yes. Like TGIF. And I was just thinking, like, what if because work is such a thing that's ingrained in our lives and we do end up defining ourselves by like the way that we work. Like, what if we could look at Mondays more positively, more holistically, and make that something we're actually genuinely excited for? Maybe it's not your 9 to 5, but it could just be like what you're doing. So we thought of Monday
Girl. It's like a mindset.
Yeah.
The way it is, right? Like, even sometimes I know we're working on the business, I still get Monday scaries.
We all do.
Is it Sunday scaries or Monday scaries?
Sunday scaries.
Sunday scaries. Like, so I have a routine that I watch like a nice movie like every single Sunday around like 9:30-ish. And it just eases me into the day, right? And I sleep better too. Like, I sleep at with no anxiety. But when I came across your brand and I read about it and I saw you guys, I'm like, this is genius. Like, you guys tapped into a specific group of people. And I feel like there's been an evolution of like young women, like the really taking pride in professionalism that perhaps I didn't see before. Maybe I was too young to notice, right? So now, like, I'm in my mid-20s and et cetera, getting older, I started seeing like more women like taking that, okay, I want to climb up to this level. I want to take entrepreneurship more serious.
Yeah.
And I think you guys struck in at a perfect time with what you guys are building.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I do agree. I think, and we're seeing this constantly, like somebody the other day, I think it was a member, it's like, how do you keep up with like the work trends? Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's almost impossible. Like, every day in TikTok, there's a new phenomenon on work. It's like quiet quitting, right? Like, all these different things that keep popping up. So we're constantly adapting and noticing the trends too. But I think the inflection point for us was like us realizing that we were feeling a certain way. And actually, luckily for us, like, that's when people and women actually started talking more broadly about work. Like, they actually were talking about their careers more openly. And I think that was like a huge shift versus, I don't think our parents' generation, like our moms, like, they definitely did not talk with their girlfriends about work. Like, that was, they didn't do that. They talked about their kids, right? Their family or what they like, which towels they might have used or something, right? Like, it's a very different phenomenon. So I felt like it was very timely for us.
Yeah.
All right. So you started off in, what was it, 2018, 2019?
2017, I think.
2017. Yeah. And for that 3-year period, you're building up the business, and then the pandemic hits and you guys pivot to online. Walk us through how big the community was at that point and what the pivot did for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Nyorai Cellars. If you didn't know, Nyorai Cellars is the only Black-owned wine company in Canada. Right now, I'm holding the Rosé, the 2021 Rosé bottle. This drink is amazing. I mean, it's perfect for those dishes such as seafood, where you're cooking shrimp, you're having some pasta, whatever it is you're having, grab a bottle of Nyorai Cellars, the Rosé. If you're having a date night with your significant other, you know what to grab. Grab the Nyorai. Whatever it is, grab the Nyorai. I mean, you will not go wrong with this wine. It's perfect for everybody. If you've never drank wine, this is a great bottle for you. Or even if you're a wine expert, you're an aficionado and you drink everything, I mean, you cannot go in Nyorai. I'm telling you, this wine is really, really good. And even though I'm boosting it this hard, it's because I really love drinking it and I'm someone who loves to drink wine. So whatever it is, whatever the special occasion, check out Nyorai. They have Sauvignon Blancs, they have Rieslings. I'm holding the Rosé right now. They have a wide variety of different collections of different wines you can choose from. Make sure to check them out. The link is going to be in the description. Check them out. Order a crate for yourself, or you can send a gift to someone that you want to gift some wine to. You can't go wrong with that. So in your Rye Cellars, check them out. Link will be in the description. And now back to the show.
I think on like social media, and like we had our newsletter, we were probably at like 10K at that time, maybe. Now we have, I would say, close to 100,000 across platforms. We have our newsletter and over 4,000 members with our digital platform. I'm trying to remember what we were when we started Social Club, like where we were.
But this was a lucky decision that Isiana decided to take on herself. And I was scared, and luckily she didn't listen to me. Like, this is one of those co-founder moments where it's like, I'm looking back now, I'm like, I'm so glad she didn't listen to me. Like, I'm so glad that we just did that. And like, I just shut up.
I was like, we have such a like passionate, engaged community. Like, they're so dialed in. Like, there's so much more we can do. And I think we can bring them so much more value. I was like, it's a no-brainer to launch this platform. So when we did it, we had no expectations or like no idea how well it was going to do. I think our first cohort, we had like 100 members joined. And those members, a lot of them are still with us today. They're like renewing for their like, they're almost on their third year with us, which is amazing. And they come to every event. They're so engaged and you just build, like they've all become like best friends and build these like authentic relationships. So.
Wow. So 10K. You said 10K members. What year was that?
Or like, it was like, I think it's newsletter subscribers at the time.
I think combined audience. Yeah, like combined audience across between platforms. Facebook group, Instagram, whatnot. Like that was roughly around 10K. And then the Facebook group, like it was bumping. Like it was like, but again, people were leaving Facebook because like social media, like things are changing. Like no Gen Zs were getting on Facebook. So. We realized like not only with the pandemic, but just like fundamentally, we had to take our group elsewhere and expand it and make it better. So
now the purpose of the conversation is talking about community, right? So let's dive deep into the community aspect of Monday Girl, right? When you were building the community out, what were some of the intentional things you did to focus in on the people you want and, you know, turn away the people you don't want? I'll let you go first, Tiziana.
Question. I think that we attract, like, I think it's you put out the energy that you want to attract and like they just naturally come to you. But I think with, we had already curated kind of a strong community, and all of these women were like-minded. They were really ambitious. A lot of them had side hustles. A lot of them have like multiple businesses and things going on. And I think it's just like everyone had like requests, like just really listening to what people want and creating opportunities for them. Events have always been like people just want to connect human to human. So like if you're creating opportunities to connect, it just naturally grew from there.
Do you remember Airbnb inspiration? I feel like we still take that with us. This is when I was like I was always commuting at the time, and I was always listening to a podcast, and I remember listening to the founders at Airbnb,
the Brian Chesky story,
and then
Obama
he was
O's and everything like
I just remember the thing that struck the most for me, and probably because we were planning an event, was what would a 10-star experience look like. We all know what the 5-star experience looks like, but what would the 10, maybe we can't get there, but we can work backwards, right? So for us, I just remember always saying to EC, I'm like, our events have to be like a 10-star experience. Our community has to feel like that 10-star experience. Like it has to feel like you're special. Like from the time that you walk through the door as an event attendee or even just a member, like you have to feel this warmth or this like difference in the ambiance. And I think we tried really hard to recreate that digitally. I would say credit to ECN's ability to do so, but we even think about that with events. That's like little details that stand out.
So what were you offering from a digital perspective when you launched it?
So I just picture this, we're all locked down. It's like the middle of winter, dark. So I started building the website again, like figuring it out as we go. But originally, like it was just like a library of resources. So like all the things that you need to like job hunt or, you know, get a raise, mentorship. So we have like pretty much all the features that we started with, we still have, and it's just grown and expanded. But you could book mentors, book one-on-ones originally, RSVP to events every month. So a monthly, annual, like access to the platform. We have a Slack group, and it's just kind of, we have so many more events every month. We have so many more tools, programming. We have over 100 mentors on our roster from top companies like Shopify, Deloitte, Google, and then it switches every quarter. So it's always been like that has been our root platform, and it's just expanded over time.
Like I noticed like a lot of, there's a lot of Monday Girl mentors. Like how were you attracting them early on to the platform?
I think that's the power of being very community driven at the beginning. Like everyone's like, whoa, it's really popping the scene like this past 2 years. And I mean, that's when we built the social club, like the tech platform, but we've been around for 6 years. We were authentically trying to solve a problem for ourselves and then realize that we're solving for other people. And I think when people saw how genuine that was and that fueled like the conversations that we're having, the content that we're having, I think that's the reason why people were able to just like talk about that with their companies. So we get a lot of interest from these top companies because they hear it from their boss. They hear it from somebody, maybe even if they're older, like someone that they're managing. So it's really awesome. We get, I would say, like almost like 30, 40 mentor applications a day. And you'll see sometimes it's like the same company and it's like, you know, there's a girls group chat. Like, you know, at like X company, there's a girls group chat and they're all like, I'm going to apply.
It's like a secret Slack channel or something like that.
Yeah.
Man, that's insane. So how do you pick the right mentors? Because not everyone is eligible to be a Monday girl mentor. What's the criteria you guys have for bringing someone on? And how do you turn those other people and tell them, if you have this, maybe we can bring you back? Like, walk us through that whole decision of like bringing people on as mentors.
So yeah, like we have hundreds of applications and like it's so amazing to see like so many women, especially as you get later on in your career, like they just want to give back and help like the next generation. It's really hard to choose, but we have to do it based on like the demographics of our actual members and the demand, like how many members are there in marketing, how many are in tech or operations, and then we fill based on, so there's a math to it. We do have criteria. So we look for, we're looking for like senior level, director level, C-suite women. You have to have at least 8 years of professional experience in whatever field you're in.
We look for other, I guess, more non-tangible things. And that's what is so helpful by like looking at their LinkedIn profiles is like, what have they done? Like, have their journeys been non-linear? Like, I love that. Like, I love seeing someone's path be so non-traditional. And then you can see if they've been volunteers or mentors in other places as well. So like that's a really good indicator for us. But I would say we're pretty fortunate and we have been very, I'd say, like, we're people pleasers by heart. We hate saying no to people. So we just tell our mentors that don't get us up. We're like, next year, maybe like next quarter, we'll see. And you never know. Like sometimes like someone that's applied like a year before didn't qualify, but it's like they've built up so much experience because things can happen really fast. So we've been able to bring people on after that. So
yeah. And how does it work with mentorship? So as a girl sign up to Monday Girl, I buy the whole, it's annual, right? And there's a list of like, okay, let's say Uber, Shopify, all these directors and etc. What is their process of like getting time with that person? Do they just have like a calendar link? You can choose some time with them. And from the mentor perspective, like how do they get prepped for those calls so they can actually deliver value because these are paying customers for the platform? Mm-hmm. How do you like manage that side of like the mentorship and also getting these women ready for approaching these conversations and asking the right questions so they can get the right value from this person?
I think that something we're really proud of is that we've been able to create like such a system that works, and like we have our system in place because it is so hard to coordinate so many interactions. When we did start out, we did do one-on-ones and we were like coordinating so that people could have these like book time. But as we keep growing and scaling, obviously like these are busy women, they're high profile leaders, like they only have so much time in their day too. So now we've had to make adjustments and scaled, but so mentors like connect is a three-month program, so they can host based on their own schedule, pick their time, 45-minute session. It's Q&A style, so mentees get to like ask your questions. It's a really organic conversation. We give them templates. We do some trainings of like how to conduct your session. But yeah, it's really what am I saying here?
I would say like Isiana is she's so humble too. She's the one that actually helped put so much thought into the process. We really try to like go back and dissect our personal coffee chats and informational conversations. So like, yeah, like I think we've tried to break it down to a science where like what sucks in an informational chat from a mentor perspective and from a mentee perspective. And like, how do we do our best? Cause again, like we're not there for all of them, but like, how can we do our best to coach people on both sides to think about these things and be more aware? So from the mentee perspective, we give them like a sheet on like, here are things to think about. Like every time before they have a coffee chat or an office hours chat, they actually like have a sheet that helps prep them on like things to ask, things not to ask. And then also like when they get onboarded to as a member, they have like an orientation Same thing for the mentors. Mentors actually get an orientation for each quarter. Then they also get like a slide template on like, here's how to introduce yourself. Like we try to make it as structured as possible. So like there's a level of familiarity. Like if you're a mentee, you know what to expect. And as a mentor, you have something to go off of if you're a little bit nervous. Cause it's like a lot of mentors, it's like interesting. Like mentors are like, how do we be a better mentor? Right. So it's like making sure that they feel like they have a good starting point.
I'm curious. I got a fun question for you guys, right? Who's one mentor that you have on the platform that you're like, I cannot believe we got this person as a mentor for Monday Girl? Maybe you might have like your own personal favorite, right? Or collective, but who is that one person you're like, damn, can't believe we got her on Monday Girl?
All of our mentors are so good.
There's so many amazing ones.
Can we say a personal mentor for us?
Personal mentor for sure.
Zoe Dash. She is like
Zoe Dash.
Zoe Dash was one of her first early mentors. She believed in Monday Girl when it was still a Facebook group. Okay. Yes. So yeah, she's amazing. And now she's doing incredible things. She's like
she's a VC now.
VC. Yeah. She actually raised money for her own VC and she's like flying around the world doing it for like clean tech, sustainability issues as well. So she's pretty amazing. She did a weekly chat with us during COVID. Yeah.
Weekly chat.
Weekly check-in. And she was very hands-on with her advice as well. So yeah.
She was really invested in seeing you guys be successful with Monday Girl.
Still, like, we just got an email from her the other day being like, one of my friends wants to join. Like, give a discount code for her. So, yeah, like,
yeah. Bless her up.
Shout out Zoe Dash.
It's just Zoe Dash.
What about you? What's one of your favorites?
There's so many. Like, I'll see, I'm like, oh my gosh, this person applied. Like, there's so many.
We get starstruck.
Yeah. And also, we're really, like, there's so many mentors, like they'll do the 3 months and then they'll say, can I stay on? I'd love to do another quarter. And then they just keep coming back. And like, we've had some mentors that have been on the roster for literally over a year.
Yeah.
They love it so much.
Yeah.
We shout out Melissa Perry?
Melissa Perry. Shout out to Melissa Perry.
Melissa Perry.
So she works in the influencer marketing department of Indigo. Actually, team at Indigo has been a huge support to us. Rosie Lee, who's at Adobe, has been an amazing mentor. She's always with us every quarter. Vanessa Geik, I think I'm pronouncing that correct, at TikTok. She's been with us for like over 6 months. She's like a really cool role at TikTok. There's so many. Yeah, they're amazing.
So now you have a demand of mentors coming in. And one thing that's interesting now, you kind of have to manage both sides of the business, getting new mentors in, getting new students in, getting new people met that are members of the community, right? And growing them at an equal level.
And keeping things fresh.
Yeah, to keep things fresh. So do you find that you're organically growing, or do you have to be, all right, it's growing, but it's not growing fast enough for me to get Facebook ads, for me to get like a marketing strategy in place? Like, how has that been in terms of growing the community? The more subscribers we have, the better the guests get. So please hit subscribe. Let's get back into the show.
So we open quarterly, and we think of these like as launches, and partly because we're such a small team, like there's two of us, and we have a few also amazing like part-time contractors. So bandwidth has been a lot of it, where it's like we have so much growth, but like we want to make sure that the experience is, you know, the best for our members. So that's why it's quarterly. But every time we think about, okay, when we have our openings coming up, like this year, we did a lot of experimentation. We had like a poster campaign all across Vancouver and Toronto.
Smart.
We do events for sure. We've tried Facebook ads. A lot of it also is just organic word of mouth. We have a referral program. So our members, like they get Monday Girl merch if they refer a friend, and they're really excited about that. So a lot of it is organic word of mouth on our social media.
Have you found something that works for, like, in a predominant case that's like, all right, we know that this works more than anything, like could it be influencer marketing? This whole for the people listening, they go, oh, that has been one of the key things that's been helping us grow our community that we didn't think would have worked.
I can say that LinkedIn has been so powerful. It's also very specific to our audience, right? It's like where a career oriented ambitious woman would be. So I think that's where speaking to them makes the most sense. So anytime we post something, even on our personal channels, like it gets lots of traction, and like we find that that's been really, really helpful. also our members add it to their LinkedIn, like they're very proud. Like at the beginning, we didn't ask them to do this, and we realized they're actually like putting in their like their titles.
Yeah, so I would
actually noticed that. Like, did you see that? Yeah. So it would be like Rachel Wong. I work at say Uber, and then / like Monday Girl Social Club member or Monday Girl Social Club mentor. So they were doing that of their own accord. And then I realized, too, this is when I was actually at Uber and I was interviewing people. I remember one of the other hiring managers came up to me and was like, I have seen 3 resumes today where they put Monday Girl Social Club on their resume.
Yeah.
Because for them, it's an emblem that they're career oriented and they care and they're trying to level up.
Yeah. I saw on your LinkedIn, I think the Monday Girl company page, I was like, something employees or something like that. I was like, wow, Monday Girl. Skyrocketed and growth. I was like, I gotta call this Rachel girl and see what she's doing.
We have 1,000 employees.
And I'm like, yeah, like, and I'm looking, okay, when did they just start? Okay, that long ago. And this is just an optics level. I was just like, whoa, she's doing some crazy.
That's a fact. Cause yeah. I was like, I saw y'all doing Facebook ads because I do Facebook ads. So I'm like, oh, y'all do Facebook ads. And they see like the 1,000 employees. It's working like that.
Jeez. How are they getting so many people to work for them, right? Like, is this like a worldwide company? Like, they got employees like every corner of the world. Then I started doing more research behind it. I'm like, ah, okay. They're so proud to be involved with you that it's actually like, when they put that as experience, it's actually like a stamp. They're certified at some level, which I'm like, damn, that's huge. That's crazy that people feel that to put that in experience, because you guys make them feel so involved and welcomed. So that was awesome to see. But you guys almost got me though. Like with 1,000 employees.
Yeah. I feel like that makes sense, because sometimes people come to us with like a certain expectations of like before we didn't have an office and we'd be like, we're literally working from our bedrooms. Yeah. And it's like, sometimes people think that you're bigger. And I feel like a lot of businesses are like that. Like it's, you know, people, we ship everything out ourselves. Like, and a lot of businesses are the same, even though they're super big and successful on the outside.
Yeah.
So
it's like, it's so unglamorous, as you probably both know, like from reality. It's like
stuff is always hitting the fan. Like, stuff is always. Not always as pretty as it looks like.
There's always like one, like I feel like there's always like one like gut-wrenching moment like per day. Mm-hmm. As an entrepreneur, there's always like one moment in the day where it's like your heart drops and you're like, oh my god. So it's like,
yeah, no, I get you, Rach.
But you know what's even more gut-wrenching is launching events, like launching summits, you know. So we spoke off mic and you were telling me how much it costs to launch. I'm not gonna repeat that, of course, but walk us through the summit. You know, it's one of your biggest launches to date, right? Talk to us about that process and how that came to be.
So we had our first, so it's an annual summit. Mm-hmm. Our first one was 2022. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, we'd already hosted like a ton of events with, you know, hundreds of people. But we wanted to create like a full day action packed where it's like you come for the weekend, you get to hear from a really amazing, inspiring industry leaders. You get to network. There's so much programming. We also have a lot of companies and business owners that come and you can connect with them. This year, we're already planning 2024.
Sorry.
No, maybe you should take this. Okay, maybe don't put that in.
Okay,
We got you. We will bleep it out.
I'm sorry. You're doing so good before, but we can't do that.
No, you can take this. Okay.
Sorry. The question is about the summit, right?
Yeah, you know, launching the summit. Yeah, here, start from the top. You know, so when it comes to the summit, and I actually messed up on my question a bit too, so it's perfect.
A little tongue twister.
You know, it's a little bit. When it comes to the summit, talk to us about launching a summit at that level. What was that like for you?
I joke to East Sienna, but probably because I was realizing how I was acting. I was like, I understand why people become bridezillas. Like, this is coming from someone that's like not engaged, not married yet. But I'm like, I understand why it's like when you have this crazy huge scale event, freaking out every single day, thinking about every detail, obsessing over it. And again, like we've actually hosted multiple events prior to the summit. Like we've actually done, I think, or we had the largest one being 400 attendees And this is at, for those who remember, like this is like the Thompson Hotel, but the One Hotel used to be. Yeah. So it's actually very full circle because our first summit happened to be at the One Hotel when they changed it up. So aesthetic was really different. We wanted to level up. But I think at the core of what we always wanted to do with the event theme was make it an FU to traditional networking events. It always was centered around like, why were these networking events so crappy? Like, why did they feel so stale and transactional? And there was like weird guys like trying to ask for your number. Like, why do they feel like that? So we're trying to think about transforming that experience into something that you actually got excited for. And one thing that actually was really interesting was the idea of, and again, maybe this is coming from like ECN being a content creator back in the day, but I was thinking about like as an influencer, like brands treat you so well. Like they make you feel so special. They're like, we want you to come to this influencer event. There's going to be so many cool things there. You get to actually network and like it looks really awesome. You get to dress up. And we thought like, couldn't there be a way that we make someone else feel that way? Like, do they have to be an influencer? Like, could they just be someone that wants to go to those events and meet other people? So again, I think we really try to curate this really aesthetic, really beautiful event that ourselves, like we would want to sign up for. Yeah. And I think we proved that true. So
From looking at, you know, all the events you guys have thrown, it always there's like a luxury vibe that gets added to
it's
the
premium
events.
It's like very premium. Highly premium, you know? Like, yeah, the colors, the even the food like looks high class.
Thank you. It goes back to the what does the 10-star experience look like, and then we work backwards.
Got you. So when it comes to that, what lessons can you pull that we could share with our audience in terms of launching a high quality event? You know, like what separates the good to great? Alex, you, Rachel.
Wow. We have many, many lessons. Okay, I'll try to condense it. I think the first lesson would be you have to be almost obsessive over every second of your attendees' journey. So like, what does it feel like from the time that they're entering the lobby? Like, did they park? Did they like transit over? Like, how are they feeling? What's the first thing that they see? We got so crazy that we had these like 30 long documents for our volunteers on like every single, to the point where it's even like for the speaker green room, like even from the view of the speaker, we're like, you know, like light this candle, the Monday Girl candle at 11 a.m. So that way it's like, it's like nice. The aroma's there, right? And it's like, make sure that like the Perry is out like at this time, like thinking about all those details. It helped that we were at the Four Seasons Toronto. So it kind of got us in that mindset. But again, like trying to take it to the next level. So that's number one. Do you want to do number two?
I was going to say that. Yeah, like every step that you have to map out the entire experience and put yourself. And we've attended so many events too. So we were like, okay, we don't like this aspect of events or this doesn't work. So we learned so much. Like even things like sound, like you go to events and like you're screaming half the time because you can't hear. So we think about things like that too. People are going to be thirsty, hungry, like tired. So we think about like, okay, we need chairs because there's going to be girls in heels. Mm-hmm. Like think about, we have to be as empathetic as possible to the experience of people and like, what do we want?
That's a big thing. I'm going to let you get back to your list. Man, one thing we experience a lot with networking events is that they hire club DJs for networking events. So you go to it and they're playing like, all right, I'm going to get this thing bumping.
Yeah.
So they're playing like their best mixes at like a club when it's a networking event. I don't know if this happened to y'all. So you're in the networking event trying to talk and it's way too loud to hear anybody because the DJ is going crazy. Yeah. You know, so no, I completely agree with that. But let's get back to your list though. So what were some of the other things that, you know, separated good to great?
I think it's so interesting how we've seen our own events progress. Mm. Like we think about that very, very first one, but it depends, right? Like sometimes I even want to go back to that first brunch because it was so genuine. Like everyone paid for their own brunch. We got someone's friend to let us use like the back of like this amazing restaurant. We've been actually able to go back as well. So I would say think about the aesthetic that you want to go for. So for this, like this was premium. So we wanted to make sure that the brands that we're aligned with were premium. Was the food a certain way? Like when did it come out? Were the speakers that way as well? So I would say, like, you have to be so you have to be so strong in your conviction that if you're going to sell a ticket for a certain price, like, you have to make sure that you're like, you feel like you're over delivering on it. Mm-hmm. Because every single second of that experience, that person's going to think about, it's like, was it worth it? Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure you're like over delivering. So I think for this, we're like, we're going to stack the panel. Like, I remember just thinking, we're like, first, we're so excited. We're like, we got sat to Exeter. Like, we were like freaking out. Like, I was crying. I was so excited. I was such a fangirl. I still am. And then I was like, okay, who else? Who else is going to be this? And then like Kayla Gray, Allegra Shaw, right? So it's like, it just, Nora from like Majuri. It was just like, it just kept going. And I was like, why not? Like, let's do this. And I think it was so special to be able to bring in such incredible women into a space like that. And we were shocked because a lot of them were like, we haven't really done lots of things like this. And we were really surprised because we're like, no, you're so like awesome and cool. You probably do these things all the time. Yeah. And we realized that like panel events like this were really special because most of the time, like, they are the conferences that are really terrible. They are like the really cheesy networking events. So we try to differentiate. And I think that really stood out to them.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree. And what about the partners? I mean, like Microsoft, right? Walk us through. And we're talking about sales before, right? So drafting up a pitch, reaching out to the right person, going through those meetings and actually proposing, this is what we're planning on doing. From an events perspective, walk us through packaging something for partners and the communication that goes between those from like point A to point Z and closing the deal.
ECN is laughing because she knows I'm crazy. I have like the email response time of a salesperson.
Yeah.
Right? It's like I responded to you like a second later. It's like you send the email, you're I'm like, I've already responded. It's like I've already, like I'm calling you right now.
Yeah. Right? Like, I love it. I can relate to that. You gotta be on that. Like, because every single email matters.
Every email matters. Response time is so key for keeping the momentum of a deal up. And I think that builds trust because at the end of the day, like, we are still new, right? Like, a lot of people are still learning about Monday Girl for the first time. There's still so many brands that don't know about us. But what's really helped is, like, building that trust very early on to have these partners constantly go back to us and say, like, that was really amazing.
Yeah.
You're really great to work with. Like, what can we do next? Mm-hmm. And that goes back to networking, too. Like, networking is about building that authentic connection. Like, thinking about like, how can I truly help this person? And they can tell and they can see. And it's like, when you do deliver on that, they're going to go and they're going to be like, this is amazing. Talk about it. They're going to tell their other friends that are probably decision makers at other companies. So I feel like that's kind of like the flywheel effect that it really has.
I was about to say that there's a flywheel effect from getting people in from corporate businesses and then using the corporate business to sponsor the event and then having that as a flywheel. Now, when it comes to the business model of the events, right? There's a ticket price, but the space you're doing it in, the Four Seasons, you know, then having catering. So is the business model more so off the partners or is it off the ticket price? Like, well, how is the business model of a summit usually go?
I'll be the first one because I'm the numbers person. Events are not very profitable. Like, at least they're not for us. I know so they can be. They're so expensive. So expensive. For us, we see it as a sunk cost. We see it as a way to give back to our members to give them an experience. We do it selfishly because it's really epic and really cool. But lastly, again, it's like a really great way to get some growth marketing as well. So we see it as a funnel for potential new customers because they might actually see someone go to the event, see social, see from the brands and be like, maybe I'll sign up for Monday Girl because that experience is really cool.
Yeah, and you're bringing like these high profile speakers, like the names you just mentioned, like Majuri, Kayla Gray, like these are like the who's in Toronto, right? So when they're posting and they're actually sharing your event, it's just attracting more of their fans onto Monday Girl. So as you said, it's a sunk cost. You're like actually investing for the future. Like those views will pay dividends when they actually sign up for like an annual membership, join the digital platform and everything like that. So I totally agree. I thought like from seeing the event, it looked like it is a success, but I didn't know that it's so hard to turn a profit on an event.
It's not glamorous from the inside.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, have you guys heard of Earn Your Leisure by chance? So earn your leisure.
Earn your leisure.
Yeah. No, so they're a big media platform in the States, and they're big inspirations to us. And they do a lot of events too, and even do a lot of speaking gigs. And one person asked them, why are you doing all these events for? Like, you have a business that, you know, does a course. They have like a university, an online university. And they're like, we're not in it to just have sales. We're in it to win the hearts and minds of people. Mm. And I was like, whoa.
That's
a whole different, you know, ball game.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is kind of the same thing, where instead of just having it in, as a transaction, you're winning the hearts and minds of people by getting out there and having that deep connection, so they're more entrenched in the brand versus other brands, you know? So no, I definitely shout y'all out for that. So now, when it comes to the event, then do you find that it pans out in the long term? Like, all right, we did the event in March, we made the money back in memberships in, you know, June, July, or like, don't even worry about it. It's gone. It's gone.
We, maybe this is to a fault. Yeah, we just don't think about
it. It's gone.
We just don't think about it. We, again, see it as an investment. Yeah, and I also see it as like, we're still growing. We're still trying to get better.
Yeah.
There, hopefully, like, I am manifesting for ourselves a day where events are super profitable for us, but we're still growing and we're still trying to get better at them too. Mm. So it's like also like the self-awareness and thinking like, there's still room for me to grow and get in these larger deals. Mm. There's still room and growing for us to maybe go to like a different city and make it like 10 times bigger. So I think that's the fun part. It's like, we don't think we've capped out, so.
For sure. Now, we're men, we're both entrepreneurs. What could you give us as advice to have a welcoming environment for women so we don't have the boring conferences and summits? Because we're going to do a summit one day. You know, we're a business pod, of course. You know, so what advice do you have for us to not be the men that you hate for Monday Girl?
I think, so if you're planning an experience, you have to think about, well, I think gets women's voices in the decision like process, like have their perspective, mm-hmm. like have them weigh in, have their input. I think when women don't see themselves reflected in spaces or at companies, like they're not going to be attracted to, you know, show up. So if you're, you know, giving space to them and actively asking for their input and like actually valuing and listening to them and not interrupting, like so many women experience at, you know, so many industries and companies, like that's what women want to see. So I think just it's important to have the representation and visibility.
I think that's key. It's so interesting because, I mean, even this is an example. We walk in the space, we're like, oh, well, a woman did this, right? Like, you can feel it.
You can feel the touch.
You can feel the touch. Woman. Yeah, exactly. and there are so many events or spaces that I think myself and Isina have been to where like, yeah, a man did this. Like, you know, like it's so obvious. Like they didn't think about this. Like, yeah, there's so many factors that were not considered that are so easy to do. Like it is not hard to have an equally balanced panel. It truly is not. It's just like a little bit of extra effort going beyond your direct network. It is not hard also to make sure that when you're on the panel, we see this all the time, and probably you guys see this. It's like in podcasting, is like, is a woman constantly being talked over, or her ideas being repeated? Like, is that being called out? Yeah. Because as an audience member, it's like, trust me, like they're gonna think about that, and they're gonna take that back and be like, okay, I'm not gonna go back to this. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it's like showing up authentically, showing up thoughtfully, and like you can over-index the beginning, and that's great because it probably won't even look like you over-index. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What is, I'm curious, what's some good networking etiquette, right?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about etiquette because, you know, as dudes, you know, this climate that we're in, it's very, you know, you got to move accordingly, right? So if you're networking and you're trying to network with a woman, what's the right etiquette to going about things, right? Like, teach us, Monday girls.
Are we talking about in person or online?
In person.
And online. Because I even now, like, sliding in LinkedIn DMs is a thing, right? Like, LinkedIn sliding is overtaking Instagram DMs. Because I think as you get older, like, you find these, like, people, okay, she went to this school, she does this, she seems like a good match, let me slide, right? So LinkedIn is, like, the new dating now, right? So walk us through your side of things and, like, you know, what are some tips that you can provide us on proper etiquette?
I have some tips, but she also has a fun story about it. But
yes,
for tips in terms of LinkedIn, I think, like, it's so easy to tell like which requests you're going to accept and not. I think if you just come in with like a very general, like, hey, let's connect or something, like, probably not going to connect with you. If someone is like, they've taken the time to look at your background, your career, they've done some research, they're reaching out with an interesting, like, specific question that's personalized and feels very, like, genuine, then yeah, like, that's a genuine way to reach out. But if it's like just a vague, like, hey, let's connect, or then I'm like, what's your intention? Like, what is this about?
Yeah. I had a friend that mistaked a LinkedIn DM for something that was flirty. They thought it was like a flirty conversation the whole time, and they were like excited. And then it turns out, like, it was, like, legitimate. And then they were, like, so taken aback. They're like, oh, no. Like, I thought this person was genuinely interested. I thought that, like, those were hints. So I think, like, the more specific you can make your messages and be very genuinely curious. I think curiosity is, like, the best way, especially, like, through a written, through written communication with LinkedIn. That's the best way to do it. But I'm also laughing because that's actually how I ended up with my boyfriend of 6 years. He slid into my LinkedIn DMs. So.
Yeah. So how did he slide? Just don't hold out.
What was this like? Yeah. Like.
He was also at Uber, like, early in the day. So he used that as an anchor first. Hey, I worked at the same company that you're currently at. I know a few people. So he name dropped. He's like, I know, he called out the fact that it was creepy. He's like, I know it's a bit creepy, but would love to go for coffee. So I was like, I was like freaked out first.
Were you feeling like the date vibes, or were you feeling the, okay, networking? Like, what was the energy you were giving to him?
Oh, full date. Like he was like full date.
So you're fancying him from the rip.
Like, I knew that he was going full date because he slid into my LinkedIn DMs. And I was like, oh, he's going like full flirt.
And you reciprocated?
Not quite. I accepted it.
Yeah.
And then I feel really bad now. I was actually at work while this happened. So I, of course, had to show my colleagues because we thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that I looked at his LinkedIn profile, and like to that credit, it's like, oh, he did some pretty cool things. He actually, like, I realized that he lived in San Francisco for a little bit, and then we were headed there for a work trip. So, of course, a natural thing to do was, like, I had to ask him for San Francisco restaurant recommendations. Yeah. And that's kind of, like, what reinvigorated the whole conversation. And we kept talking. Then finally went for a coffee. And then 6 years later, we're still here. So,
yeah. You know, that's the tricky part, right? It's like when both parties cross the threshold of, like, this is just networking. Like, for example, he can feel you, but as a guy, you don't know when to... Huh?
No, you don't know. You don't know.
You don't know. You don't know. You don't know. So it's like, you've got to wait for the girl to initiate maybe some potential.
Yes, he was good with that.
Yeah.
He was very good with that. I will say that he realized he was coming off too flirty, had to backtrack, and then made it very work appropriate, which I appreciated and I thought was really respectful. Yeah, so then, like, so
she opened, he opened the floor for you to come in and be like, hey, what's his name, by the way?
Sam.
Like, hey, Sam. Like, would love the coffee. Would love to, you know, I know a coffee shop I can take you next. Like, what was the follow up that made it? Was it like a slow build up?
Yeah, it was definitely slow because the first coffee chat was like almost so professional, and I was asking him for so much career advice. And, like, mind you, he actually looks older.
Yeah.
He has a beard. I don't know. I just, yeah, like, I for some reason thought he, like,
your New York trip you guys did.
Yeah, like, he just looks older. And then I was asking him so much, like, career advice, and then he was like, you know, I'm the same age as you. I was like, what was I doing? And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
and then at the very end, he got, like, shy. Like, the person was like, oh, like, do you want, like, you know, separate bills?
Yeah.
Do you want the same bill? And then he was like, and then I was like, oh, separate. And he's like, oh, sure. Like, cause he thought it was a coffee chat. And then he actually ended up messaging me on the way back. He's like, I should have grabbed that. I actually really like you.
Yeah.
Can we go for, like, a proper date? Yeah. So
he was balancing it. He was actually trying to, like, you know, toe the line.
He's been throwing himself out of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he has a sales background too, so he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, yeah. He was, you know, like this identifying the op as an opportunity there.
Yeah, he was like, okay, there's a window.
Let's move to stage three now.
Yeah. We can close her. Yeah.
Yeah. That's dope.
That's amazing. All right. So now we talked about online. Let's lock in on networking in person, because that's where the real befuddling happens.
Yes, you know, you can misread things
a lot. You know, and not even to get into a romantic bag. Let's stick with the professional. You know, what are some of the ways guys network in a negative way professionally that you guys have experienced that we can, you know, educate our audience?
I think a lot of guys can make women uncomfortable if they're too close. Mm. So, like, just be mindful of your personal space. Yes. You're not, like, touching her also. Like, I've definitely been in uncomfortable conversations where they'll just, like, keep touching your arm and you're just like, why are you touching me? Yeah, like, don't – if, you know, if you want to keep it professional and she's not giving you, like, signals that this is a vibe, like, keep it professional by, you know, keeping your space, being really respectful. Also, eye contact, like – eye contact is good professionally as well, because, like, you don't want to be talking to someone and they're, like, not looking at you. That's definitely happened a couple times too. I think it's just being, like, super aware of your body language. Yeah.
Hey, you know, Istiana, this is the thing too with the being too close. So the story about when we're at the event, the music was so loud, right? So I gotta come up all up in your ear and everything like that. And the optics makes it look as if, like, I'm trying to chop, right? I'm trying to, like, the body, I'm super close to you. Like, I'm all up in your personal space just to have a conversation. So when you are in a place with loud music and you're still trying to have a conversation, do you just maybe pause that convo because you're like, okay, I don't want to make her feel uncomfortable?
No, I think you can call it out. You can just be like, I'm sorry. Like, it's really loud in here. I'm sorry that I'm, like, leaning close, in close. Yeah, like, just call it out and acknowledge it, and then it's not weird.
You don't look like a creep, you know.
But I agree, calling it out is, like, so good, because I feel like that sets, like, the room up for, like, the safety, like, because, again, like, women are initially always going to be a bit defensive. It is, like, a scary situation, so, like, you just want to make sure that, like, yeah, you're calling things out. You're like, hey, like, by the way, like, my friend knows you, like, why are you going up? It's like, oh, I noticed, like, you know, like, what do you do? Like, I thought, like, it was like, I saw your name tag. But, like, calling things out so it's more clear in your intention from the get-go really helps, like, set the ground. Because, again, when it's too vague, and again, this is why I don't think it's so different from, like, the written communication piece, it's like, you can see that, like, they're not just trying to be like, hey, because hey is very flirty, and, like, being direct, I mean, like, I noticed that you do X, Y, Z. Like, that's not very sexy, right? So it's good. Like,
it's so rigid. It's
like, bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, that's kind of good to be more rigid in the beginning. Yeah, so it's like, it sets the tone. Yeah.
Sets the tone for sure.
Most definitely. Awesome. You know, one thing I want to add to it is have a breath mint.
Breath mint. Yeah, you know, you don't have a stinky breath.
have a breath mint, some gum.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? At these events, we'll have someone lather with you. Shout out to our channel sponsor, Lather, lather.com. You know, make sure you come with the extra deodorant, not the natural. Maybe put on some aluminum this time around. Mm-hmm. You know, not the natural, but you can have some lather beard oil so you're smelling good. If you ever have to go in for a hug, you're smelling
the
respectable.
The body oil, of course.
Bro. Man. How do we miss out on the body
oil? Guys, you gotta get the lather body oil. Go to lather.com. Arctic Mist is pretty good.
Arctic Mist, mine's sold out already. You can't get
tobacco.
It. The tobacco mist.
Yes, if you're still looking for one, try the sandalwood. It's really good as well.
Yes. Yeah. Anyways,
Back to the conversation.
So, working towards wrapping up, you know, we were talking about community, but we definitely got sidetracked. I still think it's a very valuable conversation.
I had a lot of fun.
I had a lot of fun too. You know, for entrepreneurs that are trying to network and build their community up, what are some tips you can leave them with so they can have a valuable, you know, engaged community? I'll let you go first, Rachel.
This is a loaded question. I would say the first piece of advice is always going to be, I think I always go back to this, is so the core of what we do is, like, build for you. Because if you wouldn't buy it, or you wouldn't be in it, like, if you weren't, like, I always think about this. I'm like, would I be this person that would be like super highly engaged? Like, we all know what the perfect customer looks like, but would you be your perfect customer? And if not, think about why. So it's like, it takes a lot of self-awareness to be able to walk yourself through the experience, whether it's an event or your actual product, and just thinking about that from that mindset. The second piece is always going to be, when you're building it up, you need a strong network. You need people that genuinely believe in you, and you won't get that unless you're like super generous and you're very real about what you're trying to do. So I would say, like, the reason why a lot of people ask is like, how do you get so many partners? Like, how do you get all these speakers? Like, I would say, like, it's not just because of like my amazing cold outreach. It's also because over time we've built like that people talk about a lot. It's like the human capital. Like, people talk, it becomes a very small circle. And if people know that you're a genuine person and they know that you can deliver on what you're telling them, that builds up over time. So that accumulates.
Big gems. Anything to add there?
Yeah, I think kind of following up on that, I always, like, whether it's a social media post or like literally anything that you put out for your community, like, you always have to be thinking about like, not yourself, thinking about like, what value can I give, like, always being value first and really thinking with empathy, what are people going to take away from this? How can I delight or educate or make this a good experience for someone, like, from our events? Like, just everything you do, think about it from your audience perspective, and be in a, you know, a place of giving. And I think from there, like, that's how you really build value and a strong community that will reciprocate back to you.
Boom. With that being said, that's what you can't control. So control your grind and control your life. I'm Alex.
And I'm Oil of Sunday.
I'm East Deanna.
I'm Rachel.
That's the show, y'all. Peace.
Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for checking out this episode. Make sure you visit hustleovereverything.co and cop some fire merch that we have in the store. And then we'll see you in the next episode.